You know, when you're in the accumulation phase and you're funding your 401k as an example, and the markets drop 10%, it's actually a benefit because you're purchasing 10% more shares with every dollar that you're contributing out of that paycheck. And you're not going to be touching these dollars for a long time. When you're in the distribution phase and your account hypothetically drops 10%, you need to sell 10% more shares to get that same dollar amount. And that could have a detrimental effect for your retirement portfolio.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Dave Rozelle. Welcome to the show, Dave. So happy you're here.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Well, I have read Dave's book, one of his books, and he is the principal of Rozelle Wealth Management, and he has a zest for life that's been shaped by a lifetime of international travels with a current tally of more than 75 countries on 6 different continents. So he's also a financial advisor, and we're going to talk about that in detail, and has just a tremendous perspective on wealth management and living a fulfilling life. So really excited to hear from you today, David. And I really did love your book and all of the concepts that you kind of described in there. So why don't you start us off by helping us understand a bit about your background and how and why you became passionate about wealth management?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that. I'm one of those unique beings where I've only had 2 jobs my entire life, and I've been the boss on both of them. I started my first business at the age of 15 after helping my dad seal coat his driveway, of all things. And the neighbor saw me working out there as a young man and asked me to do their driveway. And I made $25, which in 1984, I thought was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I ended up seal coating 8 of our neighbors' driveways that summer and ended up getting some help with my younger brother and some friends and started growing this business and did it through high school and then did it through college. And after I graduated college, I was still living at home with mom and dad. And I realized that there was a big recession going on and I wasn't ready to get a real job. And I said, you know, I'm going to come home in seal coat driveways one more summer, but in the winter, we can't seal coat driveways. So I'm going to buy a one-way plane ticket to New Zealand and then go on to Australia and come home in 6 months and so on. And if you would have told me that for the next 10 years, I'd be seal coating driveways and traveling and spending a month in 6 different countries every year, I wouldn't have believed you.
Wow. That is pretty incredible. So you clearly had just like an amazing zest for travel and experiencing the world, and were happy to, you know, seems like you made that work with the seal coating business.
I did. It was really coming from a small town in upstate New York, not far from Lake Placid, where the Winter Olympics were in 1980, and then just seeing the whole world and, you know, starting off in the easy countries where they speak English, like Australia, New Zealand, and then eventually going to Southeast Asia, and then South America and Africa. And you just started building up courage as you went along. But one of the biggest things was, as I was making some pretty good money, eventually we'd end up seal coating about 1,200 driveways a summer.
Wow.
And it was my father and my grandmother who had the wherewithal when I was 19 to start informing me about what an IRA was.
Yeah.
And those conversations really changed my life, because what I learned from them was I'll never forget when my grandmother said, saying, David, I don't really, you know, if your goal is ever to become independent of the paycheck and not always having to work, you really don't need to do anything extraordinary. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you just need to do some ordinary things extraordinarily well. And that's when she went on and shared with me the power of compound interest.
I love that your grandmother shared that with you.
Yeah. So she was definitely ahead of her time.
Yeah.
And it definitely shaped my life at a young age.
For sure. That's really, really cool. And I think there's a story about a car also that she convinced you not to get a car. Is that right?
Well, I was 19. And as you can imagine, 19-year-old young men have two things on their mind. And very often, automobiles are one of them. And I shared with grandmother the car that really the bank was going to finance for me. And it was a Honda Prelude. I don't know if you remember the old Honda Preludes.
Dude, my first car was a Honda Prelude. It was a 92.
Was it really?
Yeah, a 92.
Wow. Was it stick shift?
It was, yeah.
Good for you. I bet it was red.
It was bright red. Yeah.
Those were beautiful cars. They were fun.
Yeah.
Well, this one was black on black and it had power windows and a power sunroof. And I'll never forget the conversation she had with me because she knew how to talk to a teenager, sometimes unlike your parents do. And she said, David, this is going to be the nicest car of all your friends. And I'm so proud of you, but I want to show you a chart. And she showed me the exact chart that you would have seen in Failure's Not an Option when you read it. And it illustrated a 19-year-old putting $2,000 a year into an IRA, which was the maximum you could deposit at that time, and stopping when you're 27. So putting it in for 8 years, never putting another penny in, and having it just compound at an average of 10%, which at that point is what the S&P had averaged historically per year. And it showed that you'd have over $1 million by the time you were 65. And she went on to show me the other side of the chart, which is someone starting at the age of 27 and funding it all the years until you're 65. So doing a lot more contributions, and that this person had 20% less money because they had the power of compound interest. They didn't have those first 7 years that the person on the first chart had. And that was a day that I'll never forget.
That is so powerful. I love that she found just like the perfect example to kind of really speak to you. And so was that related to the cost of the car?
It wasn't related to the cost of the car.
It was just the amount you could put in your IRA.
Yeah, but I never did buy that new car. It was about another 12 years later until I decided to buy a car. But by that time, I'd been funding my Roth IRA all those years and had already started a pension plan for the driveway ceiling.
What do you think it took for you to, I mean, obviously your grandmother helped, but to have that kind of forethought, you know, thinking ahead to the future? I feel like when I was 20, I was not really worried about what life was going to be like when I was 65.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I share charts like this with my clients today, one of the comments that they always make is, I wish I would have been shown this at a young age. And I think, you know, most 19, 20-year-olds probably wouldn't want to start thinking about funding an IRA, although I'm very proud that my kids have.
Yeah, of course.
I can tell you a little bit more about how I coerced them into that. But I think a lot of it just had to be, a portion of it was being fortunate enough to have a grandmother and a father that were able to show me the power of compound interest at a young age. And then just also being that person that actually looked at it and said, huh, there must be something to this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. For me personally, I think I was just impatient in the sense that I was like, well, yes, I like this compound interesting, but I also want passive income today, you know, or in a year or 2 years or 3 years. And so that's really what helped, you know, the combination of those is what influenced my path.
That makes a lot of sense. That kind of leads into like how I motivated my own kids. My son is 17 and he's had an IRA for 2 years, and my daughter's 20. And she's had an IRA for 4 years, and they both started working at a young age at our local grocery store at the age of 14. They were able to get a job there. And I said, let's say you make $300. What if we have $100 that you could just spend and do whatever you want? Go have fun with it. $100 that goes into a savings account so that when you really need money, you have it there. And then I taught them what a Roth IRA is, a tax-free account. And when we put $100 in here, I'm going to double it. That's 100% rate of return. So now you have $200 going. And then I explained to them the same lessons that I learned from grandma and from dad, along with that statement that I'll never forget, that if it is to be, it's up to me. And the harder you are on yourself today, the easier life will be on you later.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. I like that. What was it again? If it's up to me.
If it is to be, it's up to me.
If it is to be, it's up to me. I really like that. Yeah, taking ownership over your situation. So you had started the seal coating business, and then your grandmother and your dad helped you start an IRA. When did you decide to shift your focus to wealth management from seal coating?
Yeah, when I was in my young 30s, so it's 10 years after college, I've had the company for 15 years now, and I was having a blast. I was traveling the world again 6 months a year, and I was making very good money for my age. And people always ask me, why did I sell the company? And my answer was, I did it already. I was just ready for the next challenge. And at that point in life, I had set up a retirement account for my team members at work and taught them about it. And friends and family members would approach me about investing because I was reading books on investing on the side. It was just something of interest. I had a passion for it. And I said, what's my next call going to be? One of those calls was, I knew I was meant to be on the West Coast. So I found this beautiful town, a town that I know that you and Ben like very much, called Bend, Oregon. And I decided that I was going to become a financial advisor and help people in this aspect. And now it's been 21 years since I started the business here, and I'm still very passionate about it.
For sure. So I'd love to ask you about, you know, this concept of the way back down the mountain and climbing the mountain, but then being prepared for the way back down as well. Can you talk to me about that and how it relates to wealth management?
Sure. There's a gentleman named Ed Viesters, and he's based out of Seattle, just to the north of where we both live. And he has to be the best mountaineer that's ever walked the planet Earth. He's the only human that's summited successfully Mount Everest 7 times, and every time he's done so without supplemental oxygen. And he's also one of the few people in the world to have summited all 14 8,000 meter peaks without supplemental oxygen. So he's one of a kind. And I remember having met Ed the day that he said, most people think that my goal, or his goal, is to get to the top. And he said, that's never my goal. I said, what do you mean? And he said, when I get to the top, I have the second half of the journey left. And 80% of the accidents, 80% of the deaths happen on the descent. That it's the second half of his journey that needs most of the planning because it takes on most of the risk. And that was an aha moment for me, because our focus of our practice is helping people who are at or near retirement. And when they approach the top of their financial summit, that last day that they add to their 401k or their IRAs, and now they're going to live off of these funds for the next 2, 3, and sometimes even 4 decades, I realize that it's the descent, the distribution phase, that also takes on the most amount of risks and needs the most amount of planning. And that was my aha moment to start putting pen to paper and write my first book, Failure's Not an Option.
Awesome. Love it so much. Would you give us some examples of, you know, what could go wrong, you know, from a financial perspective on the descent?
Well, there's a bunch of risks that we face when we're in the distribution phase that we might not face when we're in the accumulation phase, like you and I are in. Some of these are simple risks and some of them are more intricate. One of the big ones is inflation. I mean, yes, inflation's at a 40-year high, but when we do planning, we go back to the law of averages. And inflation, even though it's been as high as 18% in 1980, it averages between 3% and 4% over time. And at just 3.5%, the cost of living mathematically doubles every 20 years. So if someone says, just for simple math, that they want to retire, they're 40 years of age today, hypothetically, they want to retire at age 60 in 20 years and live on $100,000. We need to make sure that there's enough money in the account 20 years from now so that they're taking out $200,000.
Such a good point.
And now they retire and they're 60 years young. They're at the top of the financial summit. We got to get them back down alive. And they're 80 years young, because these days you and I know that graying means playing, and grandparents have traded in their rocking chairs for stand-up paddle boards, for crying out loud. Now they need to live off of $400,000 a year to buy what $100,000 bought when they were in their 40s. Do you remember how much money you spent on your first Honda Prelude?
Yeah, it was, gosh, I think it was around, I got it used, $13,000.
$13,000. Yeah, my point exactly. And now if they made a Honda Prelude, you know, brand new, it'd probably be worth about $50,000.
Really? I didn't think about that. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think that makes a lot of, it's kind of remarkable, right? Because a lot of times people, when they talk about the 4% rule, being able to like take out 4% from your portfolio. I mean, I obviously am on the investing side, so I'm planning for, you know, more growth. But yeah, I mean, that just won't really work if the cost of living is doubling every 20 years.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Correct. You know, when you're in the accumulation phase and you're funding your 401k, as an example, and the markets drop 10%, it's actually a benefit because you're purchasing 10% more shares with every dollar that you're contributing out of that paycheck. And you're not going to be touching these dollars for a long time. When you're in the distribution phase and your account hypothetically drops 10%, you need to sell 10% more shares to get that same dollar amount. And that could have a detrimental effect for your retirement portfolio. There's a certain type of planning, there's certain strategies that really, in my opinion, need to go in place for the distribution phase, which are very different for those of us who are accumulating money so that one day we're financially independent.
For sure. Yeah, very interesting. So how can you, I mean, can you give us like some idea of what folks might do differently in the distribution phase to get ahead of some of these risks?
Well, number one is just knowing, based on what they've accumulated, how much money they should be living on an annualized basis. And most people have no idea. So knowledge is power. It's gaining that knowledge. But one of the things that I touched upon in my book that I know that you enjoyed was the chapter about becoming financially self-actualized. And we basically borrowed this hierarchy of needs from Dr. Abraham Maslow, a world-renowned psychologist from the 1940s. And if you remember, he said, you know, at the base, you need food, shelter, and clothing. You can't think about anything else without that, without food. And then once your stomach is satiated, you can start thinking about a shelter to live in. And then once you've taken care of that up the hierarchy, you can start thinking about relationships and love, and then go up into self-esteem. And if you do all these things in order, he says you become self-actualized. Our goal with our clients is to help them become financially self-actualized. In a nutshell, what we're looking at is, what are all their expenses, their necessities in their retirement years? These are all the things that no one can do without: food, shelter, clothing, taxes, transportation, insurance, and healthcare. And so we're looking at that. And let's just say that a successful retiree, those expenses add up to $100,000. And let's say that our goal is to make sure that those necessities, the income to cover that is coming in from guaranteed income sources. So we look at social insecurity, which is kind of a fun term I like to have.
Yeah, totally.
Social insecurity. And let's say that this couple had, between both of them, husband and wife, $40,000 a year coming in from social security. And let's say that they had a pension, which more and more people don't have these days. But let's say they're out in your neck of the woods and they have a Nike pension and they have $30,000 coming in from that. Well, now they have a total of $70,000 of guaranteed income coming in each year. And so part of the method to our madness would be to take a small portion of their retirement nest egg, put it with an A++ company that is going to give them a guaranteed income stream for life of the remaining $30,000. And now we're able to tell Mr. and Mrs. Jones in this example that for the rest of their life, no matter what happens to interest rates, a trade war with China, a nuclear war with North Korea, inflation, no matter what is going on with the markets, their core expenses or their necessities are guaranteed for life. And it brings such significant peace of mind to our clients.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we know that most people don't work their entire lives just to cover the necessities. So, the next part up the hierarchy would be joy.
Can I just ask you one question about, for people who aren't going to have Social Security or pensions, like, my generation, what would you recommend? I mean, I know it's not 20 years from now or 30 or 40, 50 years from now, but what do you think you might be recommending for my generation down the line? Like just more of these A+ guaranteed payments?
Well, the only thing constant in life is change. And so Financial strategies are always changing and what's available, and they're always getting better over time. So what's going to be the answer down the road when you're financially independent, and what we'd recommend today might be two different things, but it would be whatever the best strategy of the time to give you guaranteed income.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's going to change. Okay. And then what about this other question? So what about in 20 years, does that guaranteed payment shift? Like, how do you account for that?
Yeah, it's a good thing. So we're always adding in that 3.5% inflation rate to all of our plans and accounting for that in all everything that we do. So that's imperative, because if you don't include that inflation. But the other thing is that when you retire, we find that there's three stages to retirement from doing thousands of plans over 20 plus years. The first 10 or so years of retirement, people are young, youthful, they're traveling internationally, they're spending more money than any other stage in their years of financial independence. So we'll increase their income at that 3-4% rate per year. But then you get to a point, say at age 80, 75, 80, where we go from the go-go stage to the slow-go stage, is us just having fun with this terminology. And we find that people still are doing fun things, but they're spending less money than they did in the go-go stage. And what we'll do is we'll only increase their income instead of at 3%, we'll increase it at 1.5%. And then at age 90, we call it the no-go stage. So the slow-go, the go-go, the slow-go, and the no-go. And then we lock in their high income, but don't increase it. And that really accounts for a more realistic form of planning in our
life. Yeah, for sure. That's very interesting. So how does that relate to the, you were talking earlier about the joy versus just the necessities?
Yeah, good question. So, once someone has their necessities covered for life with guaranteed income, regardless of where it comes from, the joy are those expenses that do bring joy into their life. So this is traveling, grandchildren, hobbies. And we really believe that this does not need to be guaranteed. And this is where we're looking for diversified portfolios, rebalancing those portfolios, and really looking for the least expensive type of strategies out there that offer great diversification. And this is where we've been using for years ETFs, known as exchange traded funds, for all those reasons.
Okay, great. Yes. And I know you also talk in your book about alternative assets. Do you help folks with things outside of the stock market?
We do. You know, we're firm believers. You know, you are have incredible talents in real estate. Certainly not our specialty, but we think it's advantageous to add non-correlated assets to the stock market. One of the reasons, the best way to reach success in the stock market is by owning all 24 asset classes and rebalancing, but also having bits of your portions of your portfolio in real estate and in different types of real estate is imperative in our opinion.
For sure. Awesome. I was wondering, Dave, if you could tell us about the kind of financial advisor you are. I think it's called an independent financial advisor, and what the difference is between, you know, being independent and working for a firm.
Yeah, what we've noticed over the last 5 to 10 years is a large portion of the top financial planners around the country are leaving the corporate entities, the big investment banks, and going down the independent channel. I started my career working for one of the largest corporate wealth managers in the world. And after a while, they're an A-plus company. They're a very strong company. But I had to ask myself, at the end of the day, do they really, really care about my clients? And do they care about me as one of their employees? And you can guess what my answer was.
That's too bad. I mean, it's just disappointing.
It's very disappointing. You know, I came to the conclusion that they really care more about stock value, executive bonuses, option prices, and things like that. And we realized that although we're in the money business, we're much more in the people business.
So true.
And people don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so we made a very conscious effort to find the right independent broker dealer. And the reason why this makes all the difference for the client is because from a legal standpoint, our only fiduciary responsibility is to the client and not our employer. And instead of having a very specific sleeve of investments that we can offer our clients, the world becomes our oyster. And now we're able to offer any A++ rated strategy from around the world. So this has been a wonderful move for our clients and a wonderful move for our practice.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And when previously, were you a fiduciary or not?
I was not a fiduciary.
Okay.
That term is used very loosely these days, but to be a true fiduciary, you're setting up your practice where everything is in the best interest of your clients. Human nature is that compensation breeds behavior, no matter what line of work that we're in. And so we've done our best, the best way possible to align the way that we get compensated and that everything that we do is in our clients' best interest. And when you put your clients first, everything else eventually follows.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's so true, especially in the long term, obviously. You know, so I'm familiar with how we create alignment of interest in the syndication world. How do you do it as an independent financial advisor?
As far as?
Creating that alignment of interest with your compensation and their returns.
Sure. So for a lot of financial advisors, it's a transactional-based business where the only time they're getting compensated is when money's in motion, when they're buying and selling. And, you know, you get a call from a stockbroker, let's say, and he's like, hey, I think we should sell this and buy this instead. We didn't like the idea that many clients have to scratch their heads and say, does this person really think this is in my best interest, or do their kids need a new pair of shoes?
Yeah.
So we believe, you know, we get compensated in two ways. One is we really stress the importance of financial planning. And lots of times financial plans are more of a sales tool where you do a one-time plan, transfer over the assets, and then it's a set it and forget it approach. If there's a death or a divorce, maybe we'll update the plan. And as I mentioned, you know, the only thing constant in life being change, our clients are throwing us curveballs left and right with changes in their lives. So each and every one of our clients gets a completely updated plan each and every year. And we charge for our advice because ideas have value. So they're on retainer paying us an annual fee to have us as the head of their financial board of directors, working along with their other advisors. But the second hat we wear, which is very aligned with the first, but also very, very different, is the wealth management component. And that is where our clients can invite us to say, okay, we have this wealth. How should it be invested? From a tax perspective, what types of accounts should it be in? And so on. And they entrust us to invest these dollars into different types of accounts based on this hierarchy of needs. And what we're doing is we're charging a flat percentage fee for the assets we manage. And as the accounts go up in value, we're taking the same percentage from a larger amount. We know that one out of every 4 years, the markets go down. So it's in our best interest and certainly the client's best interest to make sure if the markets drop 10%, that maybe their accounts only drop 3%. So again, compensation breeds behavior, and we've done everything in our power to align the goals of our clients with the way that we get compensated.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's makes a lot of sense. And I like how you describe the difference between, you know, how you're able to advise your clients and be an advisor, actually, not just get paid for selling a particular product or whatnot. You mentioned something earlier, David, about how you convinced your children to open IRAs. I know you touched on that a little bit, but is there, how did you convince them?
Well, that a lot of that had to do with just, first of all, sharing with them the lessons that I learned from grandma and from dad and the benefit that has paid off to me today. But it was really sharing with them that idea of, hey, let's take a portion of this and spend it and have fun, a portion of it and put in our savings account for when your car does break down, and a portion of it, let's put in your IRA. This is how it's going to grow. And by the way, I'm going to double it right now. And it worked. They didn't buy into it right away, but eventually they said, hey, Dad, can we get started with that Roth IRA thing?
That's cool. I love it. Awesome. Well, what sort of advice would you give to folks who are, you know, maybe they're in the wealth accumulation phase right now and they're wanting to think ahead to the distribution phase and how to prepare for that?
Yeah. I find that most people spend more time planning their annual vacation than they do their finances. And it's that old adage, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. You know, money and reading about financial planning isn't something that most people want to do in the evenings after work or on the weekends. For those that love it, that's great. But for the majority of people out there, I think one of the most important relationships they can bring in, probably the most important professional relationship in their lives, besides a doctor if they were ill, would be finding a financial planner that truly cares about them, is talented, and is going to be on their side to hold their hand and guide them all the way up the mountain so that one day they're independent of the paycheck.
Love it. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it seems like there's a growing number of independent financial advisors. Would you say that's accurate?
There are.
Because, I mean, just one thing that I mentioned or someone mentioned at some point to me was that, you know, you look at most financial advisors and they're not necessarily wealthy, you know? And so how could you, why would you entrust your money to someone who doesn't necessarily know how to build wealth for themselves?
Yeah. And I think we could say a lot about that with people in any occupations, like, you know, the cobbler's kids that have no shoes. But yeah, it's important to practice what you preach. I don't know if it's important that you always find a financial advisor who's wealthy, because there's a lot of young financial planners who are only X amount of years in, but they're very talented and they're caring, and they would be very appropriate for a younger investor that needs to learn and so on. But yeah, if you're working with a financial planner who's at retirement age and can't afford to go on his or her own vacation, you probably do not want to be working with that person.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing just your stories and wisdom with our audience. I know it's super valuable and it's a very important topic. So, David, will you please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Sure. Well, you can find me at rosellwealthmanagement.com. It's R-O-S-E-L-L. If you're interested in the books, it's at davidrosell.com, and they can be found on Amazon and on Audible. And I also have a podcast kind of following you in your footsteps called Recession Proof Your Retirement by David Rozelle, where I'm interviewing people in the world of wealth management and having fun with it.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all take some time to check out David's books and his podcast and what he's got going on. Very, very awesome to talk to you, David. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next time.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.